evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to a jam-packed 2 hours of NHL this week for you on Wednesday, the 6th of January. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can reach us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Gentlemen, it was bound to be, initially going to be a solid show, a lot of content, a lot of Jets stuff, but we have to start with the breaking news of the Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones trade, which certainly does affect the Winnipeg Jets, as Ryan Johansson goes from the Columbus Blue Jackets to the Nashville Predators in exchange for defenseman Seth Jones. The Jets, of course, chasing the Predators in the race for that final playoff spot in the Central Division, having won in Nashville by a 4-1 margin last night. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, the Nashville Predators get that dominant top-line center that they have been missing, and they give up Seth Jones among their depth of plethora of defensemen that they had. Your initial thoughts on the trade of Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson?
Really fascinating deal, Drew, because you're talking about big-time players being exchanged here, and big-time players who are young, who have yet to hit their primes or awfully close to their primes. And so starting off with Johansson, I mean, Ryan Johansson reminds me most, if when he's on his game, when he's focused, of a guy like Ryan Getzlaff. Dominant size and skill with the puck, able to protect in the corners, able to create space for himself, find his teammates, and also can score. I mean, he reminds me of Getzlaff very much. Now, the problems with Johansson have been attitude issues, and they've been well documented. If he's focused, and if those attitude issues, and let's talk about it, Nashville has not been averse to that kind of a risk. Now, on less of a term, and certainly less of an expense, Mike Ribeiro, Cody Hodgson, guys who've had a history of attitude problems, Alexander Radulov, as he mentioned before the show, so that's been something that they haven't been afraid of. But those guys, all those guys didn't come at the expense of Seth Jones, who we'll speak about in a second. But Johansson, when he's on his game, is a number one center in the National Hockey League, a young number one center in the National Hockey League, who can dominate games. And that's what Nashville hasn't had since Peter Forsberg. And he wasn't in his prime then. No. And that's the kind of guy they really haven't had in a long time, if ever.
I was going to say, have they really ever had that bona fide number one NHL centerman?
And when you look at their roster and how it's constructed, I mean, they have guys on that team who can shoot. James Neal. Craig Smith can shoot. They have guys who can score. Philip Forsberg can shoot. So you have him now with a bunch of guys who can snipe. Could be awfully dangerous. Now, those attitude things, how does it work with a guy like Peter Laviolette? He can be a bit volatile, but also he'll play a style that can, if you watch last night's game, Jets won, but Nashville controlled the pace and played a fast style. Really interesting. From the other perspective, before Ezzy gets in here, I know he's going to have a lot to say about it, Columbus was not happy with Johansson. He wasn't making the plays they wanted. He was making lazy plays. They were benching him. Different coaches had fairly similar opinions on him, and he turned the puck over, wasn't responsible defensively, was moved to the wing. So you get a guy where Columbus likes to score. They play a different game than Nashville. Big, strong team. And Johansson really does fit into that style. So it shows you clearly how he fell out of favor, because he would fit right into the way they want to play. Personalities were clashing. Columbus needed before a top defenseman. Ryan Murray is a smart, good player. Left side guy. Seth Jones has greater potential than Ryan Murray, and he's a right side guy. So if you're Columbus, you're thinking, okay, we like Alex Wenberg, we like different guys we have in our system, but we don't have, maybe, nor have we ever had, similarly, nor have we ever had a top defenseman. Now, has Jones struggled a bit? Sure. But very few defensemen can skate, play as many minutes, and have the upside of a Seth Jones. Will he be your dominant offensive guy? I don't know, but he's certainly a more than solid offensive guy. I mean, this is somebody Ezzy and I saw years ago at the under-16s here in Winnipeg. We were at the draft, too. It's funny to see him and Drouin, both guys now moving or on the move.
Yeah.
But great potential. And in Nashville, you had the depth. Like, Columbus didn't have that center depth, in my opinion, on a long-term basis. Although I like Wenberg's game, and I think he'll line up at center on a go-forward basis. But Nashville has Weber. Nashville has Ellis. They've signed Ekholm. and they've signed Yossi. So you have four guys locked up long term.
Mm-hmm.
And now you look at it and say, okay, we can afford to lose that player to gain a risk, an offensively gifted risk, if you want to call Johansson a risk, up front. Columbus, long term now, we have a core of Jones and Murray, who will carry us forward. We have Bobrovsky, who we really like. That's changed the complexion of the franchise. So I see the rationale on both sides. And the upside is probably the same.
Well, from my perspective, you have two assets that were a little bit diminished. Ryan Johansson, largely self-inflicted because of his attitudinal issues. As far as we can tell. And Seth Jones, too, a little bit diminished because probably didn't get the number of minutes per game that he needed. You know, wasn't able to blossom behind Weber and Yossi and all the great defensemen that were sort of ahead of him. So you have, you know, two teams trading slightly diminished assets and helping one another. This isn't a trade necessarily where there's a winner and a loser. This seems like a trade where there could be winners on both sides.
There could be. Before Ezzy thinks, I went and talked for about 10 minutes there. The one thing is about, you know, Johansson, we thought his value as he was a bit off maybe on the market. Certainly you could wonder if it was tainted. We had no word really that Seth Jones was out there. So you can assume like the perception, at least, would have been different about those two. But I agree that the benefits could be great for both.
Yeah, it is a good point. Seth Jones was not someone who we considered to be on the move or on the trade market, as opposed to Ryan Johansson, who we knew was really on borrowed time with the Columbus Blue Jackets. But it is a fascinating trade, as you mentioned, Richie, not just for the fact that it's a one-for-one trade or it's a young elite forward being traded for an elite young defenseman. I think it's because of where both teams are at and because of the players that are involved. You mentioned, Drew, that you think they're diminished assets. I wouldn't go that far, but
slightly diminished from their peak. I'm not saying they're diminished assets like they're albatrosses to their teams.
Maybe
just
Johansson more than Jones.
Johansson more than Jones, yes. I'll agree with that. Sorry, Ezzy, go ahead.
I don't think they've reached their peak. That's why I wouldn't say they're diminished assets. But when you look at the team's current position, the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Nashville Predators. The Columbus Blue Jackets aren't making the playoffs this year, as opposed to the Nashville Predators, who are going back to the playoffs most likely. But even though they're in a good spot right now in the Central Division with 45 points, you've got the Colorado Avalanche not that far behind. You've got the Winnipeg Jets not that far behind. But when you look at why the Nashville Predators made this move, it's for many of the reasons that Richie has already explained. You have Shea Weber, who's going to be your cornerstone for more years to come. Roman Yossi's an excellent defenseman. He's locked up long-term. You've got Matthias Ekholm, who's locked up long-term. Ryan Ellis is an underrated defenseman, a third-pair defenseman for that Nashville Predators team. And then you've got the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, as you mentioned, Richie, their clear weakness this year has been on the back end. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Murray, even though you know he's got lots of potential and he's a second overall pick, he hasn't shown it yet. So, I mean, you can't necessarily pencil in Ryan Ellis as being your franchise defenseman just yet. You want him to be your franchise defenseman, but he struggled this year. And I know Seth Jones has struggled a little bit this year. He's only got one goal and 11 points. But he's an excellent defenseman. As you mentioned, when we were at the draft in Newark in 2013, we thought he might go first overall. And I guess the weeks leading up, you could see that it was going to be Nathan MacKinnon. But at the very least, there was a chance he'd go second, and he fell fourth. And they're both fourth
That's
overall
right.
picks, right? So it's a huge trade, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both GMs, as you have already outlined, both win here. David Poile wins in Nashville, and Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson win in Columbus because they trade a problem child. Let's be honest. He's been a problem child since he was drafted. I mean, it's not just the contract. It's not just this year with John Tortorella benching him. Ryan Johansson has not had any type of honeymoon period in Columbus, right?
He had one good year in Columbus.
Well,
no,
he had 71 points last year, and he had 33 and 63 2 years ago. So, I mean, he's an elite player, and I don't think he scratched the surface of how good he can be, especially, Rich, when you consider he hasn't really fully developed his two-way game. But you're talking about a 23-year-old big center, as Rich mentioned.
That's right.
He's got Ryan Getzlaff ceiling capabilities. And then you're talking about Seth Jones, who, I mean, his skill set has been well documented. He's big. He can move the puck. He's got great hands. And he's physical. And he's good defensively. So you're talking about two teams that have now addressed big needs. And for the Nashville Predators, who we know are have their sights set on going big in the playoffs here, you know, it's a nice move for them because their weakness has been they haven't been big enough up the middle. So it's good enough. It's a really intriguing trade, and you look at it right now, and it's really tough to say who really wins the trade, and I don't think we'll really know who's won the trade for many years to come.
You look at it, there's only actually 3 draft years apart, as you mentioned, both 4th overall picks. Mm-hmm. Both got there. Johansson was late to run up to that 4th pick. Remember, he totally, halfway through that draft year, his stock was soaring. You can see why, skill-wise. Jones fell back, but really, should he have or not, we don't know. I guess the time will tell with that.
Yeah.
But you think about it, 3 draft years apart, but only 2 years, 2 months apart age-wise. End of July birthday for Johansson, early October for Jones. So you're talking about 2 guys. Now, Johansson's on that next deal, and he's signed, and certainly that protracted negotiation played a factor, I believe, and I think we agree with that, in terms of how the relationship soured in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
But Seth Jones coming up for a contract, too. Now, Columbus, we'll talk about that way later, I assume, but Columbus is never afraid to pay their guys. I mean, look at their back end now. Savard, Johnson, and Murray and Jones, this trade has totally changed the complexion of that team. But so is the Johansson one there. There's less, I'll be honest, there's a lot of upside on both. There's probably less risk. I think there is less risk for Columbus here. Because you know, at worst, Seth Jones will be a top-pairing guy who may not flourish offensively as much as you want, or maybe isn't as physical as you want, I'd say. I'd have to watch him a little bit more to be more confident about that. But you know what he'll give you. Johansson, if he's really off and he's rubbing people the wrong way, could bring you down, but upside is high. And it's interesting to see David Poile, who's a little bit more risk-averse than certainly Jarmo Kekalainen, who's made a number of big trades, jump in here. So he must love the skill. The scouts must love the skill. And you can't not love the skill when you watch Johansson. You can't. He's too dominant.
And that's what they needed, right? Nashville, of course, loses to Winnipeg yesterday, even though for majority part of that game, they were outplaying the Jets, but they needed another sniper, right? And Johansson, even though he's been struggling a little bit this year, especially early on this season, Drew, he's got 26 points, and he immediately becomes the top leading scorer for the Predators based on how many points he has already.
Sure.
I mean, this Nashville Predators team, we know their strength is in goal and on defense, right? So they traded from strength to acquire more offense. It makes
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely.
It makes perfect sense. You're exactly right. It's a trade that is logical for both teams, and you know, a lot of trades you can second guess and everything else and say, well, you know, what are they doing? This one is just one of those logical deals that makes sense that you really rarely see to some extent. I'm trying to remember, trying to think of another trade of 2, you know, top 5 picks who are still this young, and nothing comes to mind really at all. I mean, going back in the last, you know, decade, I'm trying to
thinking of the massive Lindros trade. I mean, there must be ones we're forgetting.
I'm sure there are, but I mean,
this just came up.
There were other players
through.
Involved, but I mean, Kessel, Sagan.
Yeah. That was before Sagan was drafted.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So,
it's different trade.
The players were obviously different. There was a mm-hmm. little bit more age difference between a couple of those players.
We have the audio.
What I want to do is I want to head to break. When we come back, we'll play the audio of Seth Jones. He joined TSN 1040, I think.
I guess the one quickly before, you want to hear about that. When not to the same extent, but Eric Johnson, Kevin Shattenkirk.
Sure. Sort of a step below. But
interesting note about that trade was that Jarmo Kekalainen was working for St. Louis, I believe, at that time.
And he was involved in acquiring Shattenkirk, and Johnson went to Colorado in that deal. When we come back, we'll hear from Seth Jones, and we'll also talk about the other trade and signing that went down in the last 3 hours or so. Crazy busy day in the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Back to NHL This Week for Wednesday, the 6th of January. This segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Should mention just quickly, Drew, this was tweeted out about 4 minutes ago. Adam Vingan, who's the Nashville Predators beat reporter for the Tennessean, it used to be a post held by Josh Cooper, good friend of the show. He actually just tweeted that Johansson believes he could play as early as Friday against Colorado, and he's going to arrive in Nashville tonight. So you're going to see him in the lineup very soon.
You'll see him in the Jets. Yeah, exactly right. You'll see Johansson when the Jets play Nashville next Thursday.
Well, again, you know, obviously Jets-centric here in Winnipeg, but you look at it, Colorado's right there too and chasing Nashville, so that's a huge game.
Sure. Well, the Colorado Preds game that's coming up on Friday, absolutely. Seth Jones was on TSN 1040, our sister station in Vancouver, talking about the trade. We'll play a couple clips. This is Seth Jones talking about the opportunity he now has with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
You know what? It's there are a lot of mixed emotions that go into it. You know, this is a team, you know, that drafted me, and you know, I've been here for 2.5 years now, and made a lot of great relationships. But at the same time, you know, it may be better for me to kind of move to a different spot and kind of take this opportunity and run with it.
Here's Seth Jones talking about the fact that he had heard rumors about an impending trade.
Yeah, well, obviously the rumors have kind of been around a little while. You know, you surf through Twitter every once in a while, and you kind of see the stuff floating around. But I've had a lot of talks with my agent Pat and Pat Brisson, and you know, he hadn't told me anything. So I was just trying to play and kind of keep that stuff out of my head, and you know, play a good hard game on the ice.
I'm glad Seth Jones had heard the rumors, because I don't think any of us had heard the rumors that he was on the market.
And why would you? I mean, he's an excellent defenseman, and there was nothing to believe that Seth Jones was unhappy in Nashville, or Nashville was unhappy with Seth Jones, right, Drew? And the team's been pretty good. I wouldn't say that Nashville has been maybe tearing it up like they were last year, but they've still been pretty consistent this year. They obviously lost last night to the Winnipeg Jets, and that maybe had... Part of the reason, why David Poile pulled the trigger, because as we know, these trades aren't usually something that just happen spontaneously, right? They're usually something that's worked on or at least
discussed.
For a few days or a few weeks leading up to the trade. But it's kind of interesting. Obviously, he knew something that we didn't know, and that's not uncommon because we're not in the Nashville dressing room. Right. We don't talk to David Poile all the time, right? And even if you did, I don't know if he would have tipped his hat to say that a trade was coming. But it is very interesting, because I look at this trade, and as we talked about in the first segment, Richie, I like this trade for both teams. Seth Jones makes the Columbus Blue Jackets instantaneously better on the back end. And, you know, they've got some good pieces there with Savard, and you mentioned Ryan Murray, and, you know, Tootin's getting older, and Jack Johnson that struggled, and he's getting a little bit older.
Certainly helps their mobility on the back end.
You could argue he becomes their best defenseman automatically. And Ryan Johansson, you could argue he becomes the Predators' best forward. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, no offense to Ribeiro or Colin Wilson or Philip Forsberg, but, yeah. I mean, Johansson has a 71-point season and a 65-plus point season already under his belt, right? So, I mean, you're talking about two really good young players here. It's quite an amazing trade that you just don't see very often in today's cap world.
I love it. I mean, I love that the GMs are willing to put their money where their mouth is.
Sure. I mean, exactly. It's so rare, but it's good to see finally that there was a trade, and a significant trade at that.
People talk about the cap and all that, and sure, it's a factor. I think it's overblown in terms of these trades. The GMs just... Their jobs last longer when they don't take risks.
That's right. If you never put your neck on the line, you're never going to be accused of screwing anything up.
And David Poile's nothing to worry about. I mean, he's been a GM basically for 30 years with Washington and Nashville. Kekalainen's at his first crack at it. He's had some, you know, tumultuous times, and give him credit. Doesn't stray away. That's what I respect about him. He's a mover and shaker. He likes to make deals.
Mm-hmm.
And when times got tough here, he didn't move away from what he's comfortable doing. And he's comfortable in making trades.
More from Seth Jones, who joined us at our sister station, TSN 1040. He's going to Columbus, which of course means he's going to be coached by John Tortorella.
It demands a lot out of his players, and you know, that's something that I like. And you know, he's hard on his players, but I think in the long run it's good. And you know, he almost demands perfection, but he expects you to work hard, and work ethic and is very important to him, and that's something that I can bring to the table every night.
I wouldn't be concerned about that.
Neither would I. Tortorella is a guy who really does rely on his top defenseman. We saw it in New York during that playoff run where he played pretty much four defensemen the entirety of the playoffs.
And he has his boys, and he rides his boys.
Yeah. Seth Jones is going to, you know, if Seth Jones didn't play very many minutes thus far, you know, this season, especially behind all those great defensemen in Nashville, he's gonna get some minutes on his body for the rest of this year.
And if you're worried about playing for a fiery coach, you just played for Peter Laviolette.
Yeah. He was fiery.
He's fiery. There's no question about that.
No, it's certainly not an issue there at all. More from Seth Jones about his relationship with Ryan Johansson. They're both former Portland Winterhawks, not at the same time, however.
Mm-hmm. It is a little strange. I know Ryan pretty well. We're both, you know, play for the Winterhawks, and then I did go to his golf tournament this summer. Had a blast there, and he's a great player. He's a great guy, and he's going to do great things here in Nashville, I'm sure.
Nothing exciting about that clip, no, but, you know.
Nothing there. I mean, you talked about ice time, Drew. Jones is playing close to 20 minutes a game right now.
Yeah.
So, and if you watch Nashville and the way they defended the Jets last night, aside from Weber and Yossi lining up mostly against the little line, they were just playing their defense whenever they felt like it.
Sure.
Like they weren't worried too much about matchups. And why? Because they like the depth that they have. And what they realize is that we can cut down on that. We can cut down on the minutes of some of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we can try and improve our forwards to a significant extent.
And we talked about this defense of Nashville, though, and it really is one of the best. And I remember, I think it was about 2 months ago when we went team by team across the NHL.
Yeah.
And I think we had Nashville maybe even rated number one. They were certainly number two or number three if they weren't number one. And you're talking about Shea Weber, who's a perennial Norris candidate. You're talking about Roman Yossi, who is a legitimate elite top pairing defenseman.
Yep.
And you're talking about Barrett Jackman, who has done a nice job there kind of providing that veteran defensive defenseman presence. And then we talked about Matthias Ekholm, very underrated defenseman, can move the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Ellis is kind of more of an offensive-minded defenseman,
mm-hmm.
smaller guy, but very talented. You'd remember him from the Canadian junior team. So
that's right.
This is a team that could afford to trade a Seth Jones. It seems kind of amazing, though, Drew, to say that you could afford to trade a Seth Jones, but when you're that good on defense,
yeah.
you really can. And
We had them ranked as the third best defense in the league behind Calgary and Chicago.
Yeah, and I mean, you could make an argument that they're
mm-hmm.
even better than those two teams, right? And nothing against, you know,
not
Duncan
anymore.
Keith and Brent Seabrook and Nicholas Jarmelson, but I mean, this is a very good group of defensemen. And then you look at Columbus now, and like we talked about, I mean, he becomes a top defenseman for them, even though he's 21 years old. He'll play big minutes. There won't be a lot of pressure on him because this team isn't making the playoffs.
Sure.
Right.
So it's going to be really interesting to see how these two players do, because Ryan Johansson obviously has more pressure on him. He's going into Nashville. They're expecting him to produce. They're expecting for him to lead them in the playoffs and go far. This Nashville team, if you guys remember, and it seems like it was a long time ago, and a lot of people, especially in the NHL world, have short memories, that Nashville team caused a lot of problems for the Chicago Blackhawks in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
They almost got upset.
Yeah.
Could have won that series. That was a coin flip series.
Multiple overtimes in that series last year.
Guys, David Poile's looking at this team and he's saying, I can add Ryan Johansson, and now I've got Ryan Johansson and Mike Ribeiro and Mike Fisher up the middle, Paul Gostad on the fourth line. In the Western Conference, that's pretty darn good.
A wide-open Western Conference this year? You're telling me that Nashville doesn't have designs on a long playoff run right now?
Got to get in first.
Fair enough. You got to get
in
first.
Fair
enough. I mean, if the Jets are their main competition to get in...
They're a lot better today.
The Predators got a lot better today. Last clip, Seth Jones talking about his time in Nashville.
It was unbelievable. It's a first-class organization, and all the way from the general manager to I had Barry here my first year, and then Peter Laviolette last year and this year, and both fantastic coaches. I got to learn a lot under a defenseman like Shea Weber. He taught me a lot about the game, and on the ice, and it was just great just watching him and seeing. How he played, and now Roman Yossi, I got to watch him, and there's a lot of talent, and I learned a lot from the players that I played under, so I wouldn't trade where I was my first 2.5 years in the NHL for anywhere else.
It's ideal to grow up there. Why? Because you play behind Weber,
mm-hmm.
you have the guys, you don't have a lot of pressure from the press, and the fans are great fans, but they just don't have the pressure like you do in a city like Winnipeg,
sure.
and you can grow into your game, and That's great. You talked about pressure. Pressure will be on Seth Jones post this next contract. But this little honeymoon period, and as he was talking about it, he'll be able to go in there with very little pressure, and they're not going to make the playoffs, prove how valuable he is. He'll sign probably a big deal long term because Columbus is not afraid to pay their big guys.
Mm-hmm.
We can list off numerous players, and then the pressure will come. But it's a great environment. It really is. Like, you look at it. If you can go into an environment as a young defenseman, team out of the playoffs, get comfortable, get confidence, then sign and then start next year fresh. This is what used to happen more and more in the National Hockey League, and I think everybody here is happy, giddy about it. You know,
absolutely. It's exciting. You used to have trades you talk about on a regular basis. Now we actually have a trade to talk about that's impactful. Let's head to break. When we come back, we will talk about the Flyers and Kings trade. We'll talk about Mike Richards signing in Washington. Crazy day. Still to come, lots of Jets talk. Sheldon Kennedy joins us at the top of the hour, and Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times about the Jonathan Drouin trade demand at the bottom of the next hour. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week, Wednesday edition here, 6:30 in the evening on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Getting pretty hungry here, Drew, every time you read that that sponsor read, you know.
I understand. How about are you hungry for another trade?
I'm hungry to talk about the trades.
Okay, that's good enough. That's enough for me. Vincent LeCavalier and Luke Shen traded from the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for to the Los Angeles Kings, pardon me, in exchange for forward prospect Jordan Wheel and a third-round pick in the 2016 NHL entry draft. I mean,
well, there's more details about this salary retention.
The salary retention. The Flyers will retain 50% of LeCavalier and Shen's salaries, which is what really makes it work for Los Angeles to get under the salary cap.
Shen is on an expiring deal.
Shen will be a UFA at season's end, and Vinny LeCavalier plans to retire at season's end.
But is under contract for the next 2 years after this season.
Right, but there will not be any...
If he retires, there aren't any cap ramifications because this wasn't one of those deals that was...
Over 35
or signed before the CBA with the Luongo issue.
There was no cap recapture issues. Yeah. Vincent LeCavalier will supposedly retire at season's end and just forego the salary that he was set to make.
That sounds odd, considering players very rarely retire when they have money on the table, and I don't blame him.
He's going to let go of $4.5 million.
Well, you don't know about that, Drew.
Well, that's what he's under contract for next year and the year after. 2.25 salary cap hit per season.
It's $3 million in cash, though, isn't it?
I have to look at the specifics of the. Yes, it's $3 million in cash both the years.
So $6 million.
$6 million. You think he's just leaving it on the table, or you think there's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge going on?
Or I think he might change his mind.
Sure.
What if he plays well?
Yeah, it's possible.
I mean, here's what happens here. This case. So you're getting interesting for a number of reasons. First off, Ron Hextall, the longtime Flyer, worked in the LA organization for many years.
Mm-hmm. Good relationship, obviously.
I don't know anything about Jordan Wheel. I mean, I'm assuming that Hextall has some kind of knowledge and certainly knows the people there. Shen and LeCavalier. I mean, the LeCavalier contract made no sense from day one. I mean, I remember when Ezzie and I were hopping on the plane to go to the draft when the Philly signed him, it just made no sense. Mm-hmm. Like, why they need a forward? So
LeCavalier, hop on the plane?
Yeah, we hopped.
Tough to hop on a plane.
Well, you rolled, but
kind of hopped into the plane.
Yeah, we hopped into the plane.
Skipped.
LeCavalier, young guys probably don't remember. He's once a dominant player in the National Hockey League, arguably the best player in the league, and won a cup. Mm-hmm. He does not skate as well as he did. He's significantly slowed down. He's definitely still smart. I mean, that hasn't gone, and he's very skilled with the puck. Can he fit into a style like L.A.? Well, if there's any team I thought he could fit into, it would be L.A. They're big. They play on the physical. And LeCavalier is big. I mean, LeCavalier, people don't realize, is bigger than you probably think.
Sure.
And you can cycle the puck. You know, maybe it does work there. It's a weird trade. Shen's not very offensively skilled. He's not a good skater. He's tough. Can block shots. Can he? If there's a style of play he can fit into, it would be L.A. So I see it from that perspective of getting tougher and depth on the back end, which their back end isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
And you're such a bad division, sometimes you don't see it. And then up front, you get smarter, but you're getting slower, but you're already kind of slow. It's a weird one. And this one was odd. I don't see the upside for L.A., really. For Philly, you're clearing space. Look how they wasn't playing. You'd rather pay half and have the space than pay full and have the space taken up. Shen, they have a lot of good young defensemen in Philly. Sorry, I'm going long again. I'm just excited about these trades. You know, Gossebear, and they have Sandholm coming through, and they have Provorov. Mm-hmm. So they want to clear out the system. Shen's a pending UFA, so he's going to be gone anyways. So I certainly understand it from Philly's perspective. L.A., a little bit odd, but Dean Lombardi's won two cups and is very successful and knows the pulse of his team. So,
well, from LA's perspective, it doesn't seem like there's a significant amount of risk there. I don't know what Jordan Wheel is.
LeCavalier changes his mind.
That's the risk. If all of a sudden he doesn't retire and you're on the hook for the salary cap hit, that's an issue.
$5 million, but 2.25, right?
Yeah, for a team that's really up against the cap usually. But, I mean, player-wise, it doesn't seem like there's a great risk there from Los Angeles' perspective. And Philadelphia, it's a lost season anyways. You get out from under some – they have so much dead money
on
their cap.
I thought that when the Caveat was traded, you have to go with the first-round pick for somebody to take it.
Right, but you're talking about a trade here that – from the outside looks clearly like a salary dump, which mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah.
And you got to give Ron Hextall a lot of credit. He gets rid of Andrew McDonald's salary. He gets rid of Sam Gagner's salary.
Well, he's buried them. He's not really gotten rid of them. They're still paying him.
Well, he's gotten rid of them in the best way that he can.
Yeah.
Right. Because he inherited those contracts. These were sure. Paul Holmgren specials, right? These weren't contracts that were signed.
He traded Hartnell too, didn't he?
He did trade Hartnell. Yeah. For RJ Umberger,
a year less on his contract,
right.
Clearing out space.
Right. So, I mean, you're talking about the beginnings of what Ron Hextall is trying to do here.
Totally agree.
And he's not finished, I don't think. And this Philadelphia Flyers team may make the playoffs. They might not. Right now, they're kind of one of those middling teams. But for me, this is a similar situation to Chicago acquiring Brad Richards. I mean, this LA Kings team is first in the Pacific Division. Mm-hmm. So what's the upside with Vincent LeCavalier? Well, it's a short-term upside, and that short-term upside is in the playoffs, which the LA Kings will be in the playoffs, and they're going to go for the Stanley Cup. They're not a team that's just going to be happy to be there. They've already got two Stanley Cups. So this Kings team wants a guy who can play on the third or fourth line, provide a little bit of offense. Maybe he doesn't play some games, but whether he plays center or wing, as Richie said, this is a big physical team. Mm-hmm. He's a big player, not necessarily the most physical player, especially at this point
6'4",
in his
though.
Career. He's a big guy.
He hasn't backed down from it.
It's the style of play that LA employs. He can fit in there. And for Philadelphia, you know, Rich mentioned it. Luke Shen, he's a pending UFA. He's really regressed as far as, especially when he was in Toronto as a first-round pick. He slowed down a little bit. So for the LA Kings, Luke Shen, they get a depth defenseman. He becomes their fifth, sixth, seventh
That's
defenseman, right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind this trade at all for LA, and I don't mind it at all for Philadelphia because Jordan Wheel, he's got a couple of 100-point seasons in the WHL. He's been a point-per-game player in the AHL. I haven't watched him play a lot. I'm just basing this on what I've read.
I don't have an issue with the deal without him. That's why it seems like it's a pretty good deal. Like, if they got a pick for those guys and they had the salary and got rid of them.
Right, and even though Jordan Wheel might not be a top prospect in the NHL, he's still a prospect.
He's a player.
He's still a guy that's played 10 games in the NHL this year. So for Philadelphia, he'll probably play on the third or fourth line. And you know, if he ends up finishing the season with 20 points, that's a bonus. And if he ends up being a player moving forward for that team, that's a bonus.
There's no risk from Philadelphia's perspective, and they're fortunate that they have an owner who doesn't mind the fact that they continue to have to eat dead money on their salary cap and pay players that don't play for the team anymore.
The same owner who signed those deals.
Of course. They got seven guys, you know, they have seven players they're paying money to who no longer play for the Philadelphia Flyers.
But as he's pointing, they're not thinking, this is not part of, this is not short term, this is long term.
Of course, they're thinking about their cap situation over the next, you know, 5 years. They said it was untenable the way it currently existed.
And you can see in the National Hockey League, you can be rebuilding and still be in the playoff race every year.
Sure, well, the league's got such parity and everything else. But from the Kings' perspective, I mean, you look at the Kings' fourth line, I mean, there's nothing there. So, you know, you throw in Vincent LeCavalier, he's motivated for the last, what he says are the last 40 regular season games of his career. Can he catch lightning in a bottle again? Pardon the pun, given that he was a former member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Maybe, I don't know. But, the risk is minimal. The only risk, like you said, Richie, is if he decides to not retire at season's end.
What if they make the Conference Finals, losing Game 7 and overtime, and he thinks we're this close, I think we're good enough to win next year.
And he was a contributing member of the team.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure the Kings are... The Kings are still right up against the salary cap. The Kings, after this trade, have $600,000 in cap space.
I mean, that's why it's a weird deal.
And because they have two guys that are useful on IR in Matt Green and Kyle Clifford.
Matt Green and Luke Shen are similar in the way that they play.
Sure. But one's got to come away. When Matt Green has to come off IR, you know, you're going to have...
Again, we talked about this, Rick, last night. You don't know if there's injuries down the hall. That doesn't have to worry about it.
Fine. That's true. I mean, that's a problem for another day in time if you think about it that way. It's an interesting trade. I mean, you can see it from both sides. I can see it more from the Philly side, but I can understand it from the LA side.
It can never hurt to have a former first overall pick who's won a Stanley Cup, even if he's not the same player that he once was. Mm-hmm. When you're in the playoffs and you need a goal, and I like that trade for LA. I really do. And you know, the LA Kings, I think, have been one of the quietest, really good teams this year, Drew.
Sure.
And I think part of it has to do with maybe the horrible year they had last year. Maybe it has to do with the fact that the Pacific Division isn't very good. But that LA Kings team, if you've watched, I mean, they're starting to look like the LA Kings of a couple years ago.
And they also have a bye to the, well, to the conference finals.
You don't
the only reason they don't have a bye to the conference finals is that they're going to have to play a good team out of the Central Division in the first round.
Play Nashville or Minnesota.
Yeah, that's the only problem.
Or Chicago or St. Louis.
Which is why that's the only problem that they're going to run
into. Pretty big problem.
Which is a pretty big problem, which is makes you know, which tells you why the NHL's current playoff formatting is somewhat stupid to some degree.
It is flawed.
That they
way,
are getting punished for for finishing
right
first in a terrible division.
And everybody wants to pick on the Cavalier and say he's been awful for 6 years. He had 20 goals 2 years ago. I mean, this is still, and how, and we know how many guys score 20 goals in the NHL. I mean, this is a guy that can contribute. I'm not saying that he's going to have the same impact that Gabrick had 2 years ago when the Kings drafted him, but I'm just saying you need these depth players. When you get into the playoffs, you can never have enough depth players that can put the puck in the net, and that's what LeCavalier has the ability to do.
Fair enough. I just wonder if Philly wanted to trade him and Philly couldn't score a darn goal earlier in the season, why he was never playing.
Well,
played
I think
seven games this year.
Would say that, you know, he didn't fit. I mean, there was obviously a personality issues there between the Cavalier and I don't know if it's Hextall or if it was the coach or if it was Hextall or Hextall. But I mean,
easy for you to say.
Yeah, he just didn't fit into their plans, and they were wanted to play.
Oh no, I get it. Yeah. I'm just saying at the same time, like if you want to trade a player, usually you play him.
Sure, but I think that they, or maybe they thought, you know, the more people see of Vinny LeCavalier right, in this system, maybe, in the Flyer system, the worse it is. Like you said, you put him in the King system, which is bigger and slower,
well,
it might work out.
If you put him with Dwight King and Jordan Nolan and you cycle, okay.
Sure.
But I mean, you know, getting back in your own zone and transition might be an issue. Likely will be.
We will find out. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Mike Richards signing in Washington. What a busy, busy day in the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or 204-772-2100. The final transaction in the NHL earlier today involved Mike Richards, ex of the Los Angeles Kings.
Well, that's weird. They have cap money available to make those moves.
Well, signs a one-year prorated $1 million contract with the Washington Capitals. Sort of two parts I want you guys to address. One, the fit between Mike Richards and the Washington Capitals. And two, why in the world, if Mike Richards was able to sign a contract with an NHL team this year, why in the world were the Los Angeles Kings permitted to reach a settlement with him a number of months ago?
I don't know the answer to that, Drew.
I mean, if you're one of the 29 other teams in this league, aren't you absolutely screaming right now?
I would think so.
You know, it made it sound, I mean, when the negotiation and the settlement happened, it made it sound like Mike Richards was, his career was done. He was, you know.
Oh, we all knew he'd be back. Come on.
I agree. It never made any sense before that. But now, you know, what happened between September and January, where in September he was persona non grata to the NHL, and January he's now going to join the best team in the league? Gary Bettman should, I mean, he won't ever answer that question. But from a general manager's perspective of the other 29 teams.
What about the PA there, though?
I mean,
they didn't fight it as much as you thought they would.
No, they didn't fight it. I mean, Mike Richards left some money on the table when he reached that settlement. So the entire thing was bizarre and amateur hour, if you ask me.
Well, then they said there was a non-precedent setting clause in the contract, right? That it wasn't going to set a precedent,
If another team
like
is in
clause.
The same situation, you're going to tell me that they're not going to, if there's an owner like an Al Davis, which there really isn't,
right.
But if there was an owner like Al Davis, you don't think he'd go to court over that and get the same deal for his team? Anyways, Mike Richards to the Washington Capitals. Talk about the on-ice impact, the on-ice effect Richards will have as a member of the Caps.
Well, it is a really good fit for Mike Richards, and it's a good fit for the Washington Capitals. And I agree with Rich. I think I thought Mike Richards would be back in the NHL, and I think we even talked about it as recently as last show, which was a couple of weeks ago, at least. Mm-hmm. The last show that all three of us were together was a couple of weeks ago, and we all agreed that we thought Mike Richards would be back in the NHL. So it's a fit because the Washington Capitals are pretty set as far as their top six goes, and really as far as their scoring goes, right? Mm-hmm. They've improved on the right side, adding TJ Oshie and adding Justin Williams, and you know, Drew just mentioned it, they're the top team in the Eastern Conference. Rich picked them to win the Stanley Cup, and that pick is looking very good right now. When you look at the depth players for the Washington Capitals, and Mike Richards is going to be a depth player. He's not going to be counted on to go out there in the first power play unit. He's not going to be counted on to get that big goal when, mm-hmm. when they need it. They have Ovechkin. They have Backstrom.
That's
they
right.
have Oshie. They have Kuznetsov, Burakovsky. I mean, this is a stacked team. And he goes in there, and he'll most likely play on the fourth line with maybe a Brooks Like, maybe Tom Wilson, you know, and that will be a great fourth line. If that's your fourth line,
oh, I know.
You're laughing, right? So you know, we know what Mike Richards can bring. He's got two Stanley Cups. He's got the World Junior Gold. He's got the pedigree, right?
Mm-hmm.
The international pedigree. And a player like Mike Richards, I really think this will be a great new beginning for him. And he struggled off the ice, of course, and he didn't have a good summer. But, I mean, if he can bring the type of game that he was bringing for the LA Kings in the playoffs, tenacious on the forecheck, a guy that has a good nose for the net, will go hard to the net. Mm-hmm. He set up plays, but he's probably, you'd say, more of a shooter. But he's the type of guy that, you know, earlier in his career, when Paul Holmgren signed him to that really long-term contract that the LA Kings traded for, they had kind of, I think, projections of him being a second-line center. And kind of being someone who could consistently get 60 or 70 points. Mm-hmm. He never turned out to be that player. And I think coming into Washington with Barry Trotz, who's got a lot of experience, and as Drew mm-hmm. mentioned off air, there's the Manitoba connection. He's played with Justin Williams, who he's friends with. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are some connections there. Mm-hmm. There's some familiarity. So I think when you're talking about Richards, I think there's a really good chance for him to be a big part of this lineup. And, you know, he might start off a little bit slowly, and that's to be expected for a guy who hasn't been in the NHL for most of this year. But when you're talking about different fits for him, I don't know if you could pick a better team than the Capitals for him to really go into, step in there, and contribute.
Yeah, I agree, Izzy. I think you make a lot of good points there. What you're going to likely drop him in as is a fourth-line kind of center.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Michael Latta plays hard, and he's tough, but he's Mike Richards, even when he's not playing well, is better than Michael Latta. Right now, they got Zach Sill playing. They got some injuries. Jay Beagle's out.
Zach Sill's about to be suspended.
Well, you know what I mean, right? So the guys who are in the lineup. So you look at it, okay.
Completely dispensable.
The thing about Richards is a couple of things. First off, you know, he doesn't skate as well as he did. He's never the best skater anyways, but he's slowed down. But he is smart,
mm-hmm.
reads the play exceptionally well, in my opinion, and he is tough as nails. And he can play a penalty kill. If you want him on the power play, he can play, because the speed is less of an issue likely there. Plus, he can play the point if you need him to. He can block shots, do different things like that. He can move to the wing if you need him to, put him in defensive situations, win draws. I mean, a lot of things, and he's won before. So certainly there's issues that he's had to deal with. But what's the risk here? He doesn't work out. You have a $1 million deal,
yes.
prorated, right?
$600,000.
So you cut him at the end of the day, and that's fine. And if not, the upside is great. I think it's great. You can get value out of him, turn his career around, and see what you got. But I love what Washington has, because they have so many pieces that can do different things. So this is a great choice. He, to me, signs with the best team in the league. Like, without Richards, they're the best team in the league, in my opinion. And I think he likely can make them better. And if he doesn't turn up, I still think they're the best team in the league.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, really, when you look at it. I mean, there's no downside from the Washington Capitals' perspective.
The only downside you could think of is if these issues that he has cause problems.
Then they get rid of him.
If he has.
Yeah. And if there's any personality issues, anything like that, you just get rid of him, and what does it cost you? It costs
right.
you nothing.
Right.
He's going to a division and to teams he's very familiar with, having spent so many years in Philadelphia.
That's right.
I mean, they're already the best team in the Metropolitan by, you know, a country mile. You know, they're 12 points up on the Islanders. They got 7 losses all year long.
Yeah. They probably want to add one more defenseman before the end of the deadline.
Well, especially depending on what's happening with Brooks Orpik, who's and that's where, you know, there was some chatter if Orpik would be out long term all the way to the playoffs. Maybe Dustin Byfuglien would be of interest to them. I don't quite see it.
But it didn't really make any sense to me.
No.
Like somebody got a bad scoop there.
I'm
wrong.
Yeah,
but
that's what was. Elliot Friedman mentioned that in his 30 thoughts.
I'm pretty sure that Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd are being traded to all 29 teams
exactly.
at the same time.
Well, yeah, I'm just reporting what other people are reporting, you know, and these, you know, for whatever it's worth, as always. But
because the best part about reporting, and these guys were doing their job and working hard, but all three big deals today, none of them were speculative.
That's true. Absolutely none of them were even chattered about until earlier in the day today, and they said something along the lines of hearing that there's some conversation picking up. Well, it picked up and really hit the ground running real quick there. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Sheldon Kennedy, talk about his return to Swift Current, the great work that he's doing with his Child Advocacy Center. We're excited and honored that he's going to be able to join us.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk to Sheldon Kennedy next. Second hour of NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and your home for all your Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Sheldon Kennedy. You, of course, know Sheldon Kennedy as a former NHL player, and he is now in charge, and he's got the namesake behind the Sheldon Kennedy Child Advocacy Center. Sheldon, appreciate your time, and welcome to the program this evening.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, you guys.
Our pleasure, Sheldon. We're really glad you were able to make time. We wanted to talk about, there's a lot of media about your return to Swift Current that occurred earlier in the week, and, we appreciate you joining us to talk about that. What did it mean to you to go back to Swift Current, where you obviously played your junior hockey and where you were tragically the victim of abuse at the hands of Graham James?
Well, I haven't been back yet, but the mayor has made an apology, and I'm actually heading there tomorrow, and we're going to do a screening of our new movie tomorrow night there. And so, but looking at what the letter that Jared Schaefer, the mayor of Swift, put together, and I've known Jared for 3 or 4 years, I guess, and I kept telling him, I said, how do we turn this, such a tragedy and this looming black cloud over Swift of Graham James into a positive and give Swift Current the opportunity to be leaders. And, and I think that, the first thing that has to happen is acceptance. So for me, I guess when I see what Swift Current has done and the letter that the mayor has written and, things that are going on, the way I feel is a sense of, a sense of hope, I guess. I'm happy for Swift Current because they've got to that point that gives them permission to move on. And if we look at the ripple effect of somebody like Graham James in a community such as Swift Current, there's a lot of shame and guilt of people feeling, why didn't I pick up on that? Or why didn't I, I saw, Graham with Sheldon once walking down the street and geez, I should have known. And, there's a lot of that that's carried around. And I think what's gone on is it's given them permission to move on and move on with solution. And so for that, I'm very grateful.
Sheldon, you mentioned the movie, and for those who aren't aware, the movie is called Swift Current. You mentioned that it's going to be playing tomorrow in Swift Current. How did this project come about, and what are the plans for this movie? And also, as a kind of third part to that question, how has the movie been received?
We were approached by a filmmaker, Joshua Ruffe, who's a filmmaker who's also made the film Lost for Life, and it's won some awards with that, and also a three-time Academy Award-winning documentarian, Mark Jonathan Harris. And they approached us about making a film about Sheldon's story. And we initially said, no, we don't want to do a story about Sheldon's story, right? And I think that, after good discussion and lengthy discussion, what we knew is that there hasn't been a film that's been made that focuses on the impact of this type of crime on the victims. And that's where the focus was. So there's Sheldon in it, and there's a young gal named Mickey Decker, and there's another young man named Graham Jellicor. And, we all had similar experiences, and the outcome was the same. And so what we know is that through science, is that, early childhood trauma, child abuse, and sexual abuse is one of those types, it develops the brain differently in these young kids. And the way that what we know through the Child Advocacy Center is that, we do 125 investigations a month at the CAC, and the presenting issues of these kids are suicidal ideation, mental health, depression, addiction, sexualized behavior, violent behavior, and the list goes on. And so what we tried to do was connect the dots. And if we look at our communities and we look at the way we work within society, we always work at the outer layer of the onion. But what we have to do is get to the core, and the core is really stems from early childhood trauma, and that can come in many ways, shapes, and forms. So the purpose of the film was to connect the dots and make sense of the invisible damage that child abuse has. And the title, Swift Current, I didn't like the title. We actually just left it in there as a placeholder to begin with as we were making the film. But when they were screening the film down in the U.S. and in other places to get feedback, people there are like, oh, what a great title. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there going like, this is a brutal title. And I'm like, well, so explain the title to me. So they're talking about the title, and they said, yeah, you know, like when a kid gets abused, they're swept away by the swift current. So I'm thinking to myself, well, that makes sense. So anyway, that's how we ended up with the film and the process in our minds about making it.
And Sheldon, it came out this week as well, and I want to get your comments on this, that the city, Swift Current, is going to be starting a new initiative in terms of, you know, trying to get more screening for the people who are working with children, adults working with children specifically. And you made some comments about, you know, that is in place with certain organizations, but there are ways to get around that. And so you're hopeful that provisions like this will be able to protect children from having to deal with these terrible issues.
Well, you guys are from Manitoba, and so am I. And you know, we need to give, you know, the Manitoba Sport Manitoba a lot of credit, and Hockey Manitoba. They were the first ones to mandate it for all coaches in that province, and that was back 10 years ago. So, mm-hmm. But the gap, and where the gap is that, you know, where is the checks and balances with people that don't fall under a sport organization or a youth serving organization of any sort? So the goal is to, you know, create in Swift Current, create training and background checks for those, you know, the individuals, say if a parent wanted to sign their child up and, you know, for private goalie lessons, coach lessons, right, or piano lessons or whatever, we would create a website which they could go on to before they signed up with these individuals or day homes or whatever it is, and see that their background check's been done and the training's been done no different than, say, you know, Hockey Manitoba or Sport Manitoba. And to me, you know, the background check is, it only catches the individuals if they've been previously convicted.
Right.
You know, they could have 20 charges, but it's only about a conviction. So that's a piece of it. But I think the bigger piece of it is the way we look at it, is that, you know, through the cases that we deal with, which is very normal within child abuse, 95% of the people that the child knows their abuser 95% of the time, and 47% of the time it's a parent or caregiver. So the safest place for these kids a lot of times is our schools with teachers, is our sporting organizations, is our community organizations, is the Boys and Girls Clubs, etc. So our mindset is let's focus on the 98% of good people and give them the tools to be better, because they are a good coach, because they are a good teacher. How do, and a child discloses something to them, how do we give them the tools so they know what to do?
You're listening to NHL This Week. We are joined by Sheldon Kennedy. Sheldon, of course, a former NHL player, a former Memorial Cup winner. He's now the lead director at the Sheldon Kennedy Child Advocacy Center. Sheldon, 2015 just ended. A Happy New Year to you, of course. In 2015, you received both the Order of Canada and the Order of Manitoba. What did it mean to you to be honored with both of those honors? And, you know, does that, I mean, the Child Advocacy Center is doing such outstanding work. Does it really sort of affirm the work you're doing when you are recognized like that in a broad national sense?
Well, I had to kind of pinch myself when they said that, you know, I'm been selected to receive the incredible honor of Order of Canada and the Order of Manitoba. I mean, at both times. And, you know, I look at myself receiving an Order of Canada or an Order of Manitoba with Jonathan Taves and Tom Cochran and many other great people. And, you know, when I look at the, you know, the Order of Canada and all the people that were receiving it on that day, and I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, when I look back, I think I could only think of one thing, and that there's hope. There's hope for people, because I know that if you looked at the NHL back in my days, the last person that anybody would have ever thought of getting or winning or receiving an Order of Canada would be Sheldon Kennedy. So I think that, you know, the gift that's given the issues that I represent. I look at them, I look at both of those honors as being honors for the issues I represent. And what that's done is raised the level of awareness and understanding of the impact of this crime in our country and in our communities. And for that, I will always be grateful. But, you know, I think if it represents anything for me, it represents hope that there is a way to become the person that you've always wanted to be. And sometimes it takes you a while to get there, and sometimes you feel you'll never get there. But you know what? There is a way out for a lot of those people that don't ever feel there is.
Well, Sheldon, I know you're being a little bit humble, but mm-hmm. I think I speak for everybody here when I say that you deserve all of the honors that you're being given, because you have been an inspiration to a lot of people. And you mentioned hope, and you've provided a lot of hope. So, you know, every honor that you get, every award, you know, I think you deserve.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And, you know, there was a time I remember, you know, when my story first broke, and, you know, the initial newspaper clippings and articles and stuff were, you know, that Kennedy, we're not sure if this story's true. And, you know, all the, you know, it was interesting. And, you know, what's been really interesting is how our conversation has shifted over the years, how the way we all talk about it, not just Sheldon, but the way the questions come from the media, the way that we talk in the schools, the way, you know, I go back, and I know you guys are the Jets radio, and, you know, but I go back and I look at Hockey Canada in 1997 and the decision that, you know, Bob Nicholson and I had, and it was about what are we going to do? How do we make, and how do we take, you know, this terrible situation and try to make the best out of it? Well, I look back and I look at hockey across this country. There is no youth serving organization that educates and makes it a priority and a standard within an organization for all of their people to be certified, whether you're a coach, many places, referees, parents, than hockey. And, you know, I applaud them for doing that, because you know what? These just aren't hockey coaches. These are parents. These are people. These are, you know, people in our community. And, you know, if you look at the way Graham James and the types of Graham Jameses, how they operate in our communities, well, they operate on society's ignorance and indifference. Our best defense is knowledge and creating a confidence. And I think when we can train people, when we can create the standards and give people the tools, you know, we have to have confidence that people will and do want to make the right decision. But a lot of times they don't know what that is. So how do we give them the confidence to act on their gut if they ever do feel something is wrong?
Sheldon, you mentioned it was about 20 years ago that it was revealed by yourself that what happened with Graham James and Western Hockey League's Swift Current Broncos. When you look at the Canadian Hockey League and junior hockey in general, are they where they need to be when it comes to protecting the young hockey players so that things never happen to them that may have happened to you?
Well, you know, I think that, I think, you know, if we look at the Western League and the Canadian Hockey League, I know they train all their billets, and I know they spend a lot of time on educating their players. And, you know, I mean, I'm quite confident that, you know, the Graham Jameses of the world wouldn't operate in junior hockey like he did, and you know, I think others that we know of you know, in the game as well. But, you know, I think that I think they've done a good job, and I think there's always room for improvement. I don't think that, you know, this is about a finish line. I think this is continually about progress, and continually making progress, and continually being open-minded and understand, you know, that we're dealing with people. And, you know, even though people are in the Western Hockey League, you know, there's a small percentage that ever make a career out of the game. So how do we set these kids up to be the most successful they can be with the game of hockey and all the teachings that come with it, and sports and leadership, to be successful in their own life? And I think, you know, that I think we do great. I think there's good things that are happening. I think that we've come a long ways. I think that, you know, we've still got long ways to go, but I think it's in a good place. And I think that there's a commitment, which, you know, when I talked to Ron Robson, who's the, you know, the president of the Western League, and Dave Branch and Gilles out in Quebec. I mean, when we talk to them, you know, there's a commitment. And I think that, you know, it's about balancing. A lot of times there's a nervousness around the issues I represent when it comes to child protection. And if we look at the response from Swift Current, you know what? I think that that's an eye-opener, and that's a clear indication that, you know what, the reality is that people want this, and there's an expectation that it needs to be in place. I think we're getting there.
Sheldon Kennedy is the lead director at the Sheldon Kennedy Child Advocacy Center. He returns to the city of Swift Current later on this coming week and weekend. The movie is called Swift Current. Sheldon, on behalf of all of us in the room, thank you so much for your time this evening and the work you are doing. I do not have the vocabulary to properly articulate the importance and the tremendous job you are doing with the Child Advocacy Center. And we wish you all the luck and all the best in the future going forward.
Well, thank you guys. And I just want to say that Sheldon Kennedy and others couldn't carry our message without the media and the opportunity to do that. So I really appreciate the time, and I appreciate the opportunity for you guys to allow us to carry the message. And, you know, there's the pendulum swings both ways here. I appreciate it.
Sheldon, you can come on our show anytime.
It's an open invitation, Sheldon.
We could do it next week.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Sheldon. Have yourself a good night, and take care.
Yeah, see ya.
Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Sheldon Kennedy for joining us. Fantastically articulate, so well spoken, and so passionate about such an important issue. We really are honored that he was able to join us. In case you missed any of it, we will have it available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com, which has all your latest Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
Gotta say, I really like those new All-Star jerseys. I like them.
Is there an All-Star game this year?
We'll talk about
let's be honest though, Drew. They got rid of that ridiculous neon electric green.
It's a jersey of a game that's meaningless. I mean, I guess the only they sort of tie it into Nashville this year by having that sort of mustard yellow trim around it. It's fine. Do you want to talk here? I'll give you guys the option. We have Joe Smith coming up at the bottom of the hour of Tampa Bay Times talking about Drouin. Do you want to talk? Give our take on Drouin now, and you want to talk the All-Star snub? What do you want? How do you want to take this? It's your choice. Whatever you want.
I want to talk about the Tampa situation first before the interview, and we can kind of touch on the Jets stuff in the last segment here.
Okay. So Jonathan Drouin, former high draft pick, third overall?
Third overall.
Third overall draft pick, demanded a trade, requested a trade back in November.
McKinnon, Barkov, Drouin,
Jones.
And Jones.
It's really
one of those players doesn't fit there.
And is Jonathan Drouin right now. He was requested a trade back in November. Nothing came of it. He was sent down to Syracuse of the AHL this past weekend. Uh-huh. And the trade demand was been made public by both him and his agent, Alan Walsh.
Alan Walsh, he's never public.
No, he's never public at all. You know, let's start with, what is Jonathan Drouin as a player right now?
Well, it's tough to tell, Drew. I think that's a good question. He's immensely skilled. I mean, if you remember, it was 2 years ago in Winnipeg when he came out 2-on-1, I think it was with Stamkos or somebody, and his hands are, as good as it gets. His stick handling is great. He's especially is immensely skilled. I mean, he's not the biggest guy. He's not going to be your physical player, but his skill set and skating, all that, his top end, speed with the puck, he's a little bit of a late bloomer. He plays at a real fast pace. He's got great skills. So, he's going to be a point producer.
Why can't he crack the Tampa Bay Lightning roster?
Well, good question. Let's be honest here. We talked about it a little bit before, Drew. I think
as opposed to the other days where we're not honest.
We've talked about it on the show before, if you've listened.
Mm-hmm. If you haven't, what have you been doing?
Yeah, exactly. No, but this is a relationship that hasn't suddenly gone sour.
No.
There have been rumblings that he was available this offseason. And I had heard that there was problems with them last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and if you talk to enough people around the game, the draft this year, people thought he was available. Now, he's probably always been available for the right price. Now, you could argue every player is available for the right price, but
some people are more available.
Yeah, like I don't think MacKinnon or Barkov right now are available, put it that way.
Sure.
So they have this, there hasn't been a great relationship there. He's probably thinking, this is a skilled team. I'm a skilled player. I fit into what we're trying to do here. Why am I not played? And they're probably thinking your attitude's an issue and different things like that that we've heard. So I don't know. It's not a good situation because he's the kind of guy that goes elsewhere, fits into the scheme. It's hard not to when you have that much skill, and puts up a lot of points. So
Tyler Seguin.
Is it untenable? I mean, different than Seguin.
I know different, but same, yeah, same concept that you trade a guy for, yeah, pennies,
I mean,
on the dollar.
People are talking about Seguin. I understand the comparison. But as Seguin went to the Stanley Cup Finals playing with, what, Krejci and Jágr on the right wing, granted, but played a significant role in that team that eventually lost the Blackhawks.
And Durant didn't play as significant a role last
that's
year?
That's right. Okay. It wasn't like on a top two line. That was, you know, big minutes and all that stuff. So it's a weird one. Steve Yzerman can be stubborn, and I think I don't want to look at it exclusive of the Stamkos situation.
What's going on with John Cooper and two of his key players on the team? One key player, one guy you thought should turn into a key player.
Right, but looking at just Jonathan Drouin, let's simplify this, Richie. He has attitude problems.
That's what we've heard.
Well, he has. Did you see the interview he gave to the media? Does that look like a guy who has a good attitude?
Oh, but that's a guy who you didn't think was going to be happy going to Syracuse.
He's a young guy, too, is he? Like,
he's
his agent's way out there, too, though.
But then you're creating excuses for him. I mean, you've heard he's lazy. Oh. You've heard the same things
that I've heard,
Rich.
Fair enough.
You've heard his work ethic isn't very good. He's a third overall pick. And as Drew mentioned, when the Lightning went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, he wasn't a big part of that team. I mean, he was happy to get into the lineup when he could get into the lineup. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy, I think, who has a sense of entitlement. And I think you're talking about a guy who thinks he's better than he is. I mean, what has he accomplished at the NHL level that he thinks that he should be in the lineup every day? 32 points in 70 games, that's a decent rookie year. And you mentioned, you know, his immense skill. Rich, he could get traded to a team and he can end up being an 80 or 90-point player. I mean, he has that high-end skill. At 20 years old, it's untapped potential, right? But in Tampa Bay so far, I've seen a young hockey player who's pouting. That's what I see.
If you want to send a signal to him, I mean, are they sending him a message? Is that what they're doing here?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you already have a poisonous relationship. Because he asked for a trade in November. So you already know he wants out. If you're sending him a message by sending him down to the AHL,
you're telling him, we make the calls here. You don't make the calls.
You think the Lightning were surprised that the trade demand became public?
Well, Alan Walsh is a loose cannon, so probably somewhat, but not really.
How does this help the Lightning that it's now a public trade demand?
Oh, I don't think it helps them. But at the same time, I'm not sure how much it hurts them because I'm pretty sure everybody in the league knew that he was probably available for a high price, but available.
Sure, but it's one thing if the 29 other general managers know. It's another thing if the entire public knows. Like, how can?
But
you...
he's not like, you know, like St. Louis or any of the other guys, Drew, or you're near the end of your career or you're pending UFA, all that stuff. I mean, he's there's no contract risk here. There's no leverage.
How do you bring, if he goes out in Syracuse and they play three times in three nights this weekend? If he dominates,
sure.
How do you bring him back into your lineup in Tampa Bay?
You say he's our best player and to take the spot. And the players say, okay, he's skilled, we'll play with him.
Even though this is a guy who's already publicly, you know, announced that he doesn't want to be there.
I don't know if players in Tampa Bay, and I haven't been in those rooms and we have to ask guys like Shane Natty, but I don't know if teammates in Tampa Bay take that personally. Or Syracuse. I'm not sure.
Well, I think less so Syracuse. All right. I mean, I think you care less about the impact he has.
Should ask Nikolai Ehlers about him. He played with him, didn't he?
Yeah, they would have played together in the QMJHL. That's right, but I mean, it's just okay. So what can Steve Yzerman hope to get for Jonathan Drouin now? And do you think the trade happens this year?
Ryan Johansson.
But if you look at Jonathan Drouin, and we talked about it this year, he's only got 2 goals in 19 games, but he's been a healthy scratch.
Yeah.
He's been in and out of the lineup.
He's also been injured this year.
Sure, he was injured as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about a player similar to a Seth Jones, similar age, drafted the same year.
Yeah.
You're talking about potential that is really very high. So you're talking about a guy who has the potential to get back, at the very least, a player who is a top six forward or a top four defenseman, I think. So you're probably, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, mm-hmm. you're probably maybe looking for a defenseman in return, but you're probably also considering getting a depth forward in return, someone who's an established forward, or you're looking for a draft pick. But if you're Tampa Bay right now, you're most likely not looking for a draft pick because you're going for it this year. So I think, I don't know if Jonathan Drouin is necessarily going to be traded immediately.
Are they going for it? They're like, what do they? That's a, I mean, they're not in the playoffs right now, and Stamkos seems like he's working them over.
Right, but
and they got 7 weeks to decide with Steven Stamkos.
I'm not saying I did pick them actually to go to the Stanley Cup Finals at the beginning of the season, but based on how they did last year, this isn't a team whose goal at the beginning of the season was just get in see how we do. Right, this is a team that I think has aspirations to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. When you've got players like Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, Stamkos, Hedman, I mean, this is a good team that if they squeak in, I could see them doing some damage.
Oh, for sure, I agree with you. But Walsh knows he has them on tilt here. He sees them on the back, getting leaned on for Stamkos, and says they're weak. That's what I'm thinking. That Alan Walsh was in Alan Walsh's mind. This team is in trouble with Stamkos. They can't figure out what to do. He seems to have all the leverage. I'm just gonna lean on a weak party.
That's one thing, but I mean, Stamkos has the leverage. I mean, if Steve Yzerman could just as easily say, you haven't contributed to the team thus far this year. Screw off. I don't have to deal with you for a while.
Depending on what they get for Stamkos, Drouin may become more important. Having said that all, you look at what he was able to get for St. Louis with no leverage.
Sure.
He did a good job.
He did it. I mean, and that's the problem with Drouin is...
Although the Callahan extension hurt him.
Yeah, that hurt him, but that was a self-inflicted wound at that point in time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the problem with Drouin is, I mean, when you look at the Johansson and the Seth Jones trade that happened earlier today, those are both guys who are bona fide NHLers who've done it at this league.
Yes, that's right.
Drouin has all the potential. Mm-hmm. We think he can do it, but you've never seen him do it. He's had opportunities where he showed flashes, but that's all
it
is.
Absolutely right. You get less for sure.
Yeah, so how do you trade for him? I mean, what do you trade
well,
for
you
him?
You can trade for him.
Do you trade for him? What does Yzerman, doesn't want to trade him because the guy could turn into, if he turns into what you expected when you drafted him, you're not going to get that in a trade right now.
That's right.
Is it a real problem for Steve Yzerman right here? That's a tough general manager's job between the Stamkos decision and now the Drouin decision.
Yeah, but hold on. I mean, it's not all somebody else is doing. Stamkos has been a pending free agent for a while. Everybody knew. It's like here in Winnipeg. You know it's coming. So.
Off topic, we won't get into it. It's mind-boggling to me that they chose John Cooper over Steven Stamkos if it was that simple. And we talked about it before. And now you got another issue here. We'll see. Let's go to break. Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times is going to join us, talk more about the Drouin trade demand and the Lightning struggling this year. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Chell, this week, a programming note about this coming Saturday's Legal Curve Hockey Show, a 9 a.m. start time. 9 a.m. to 12 noon Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll get you set for Sunday's return. Wrath of Kane. Can I call it the Wrath of Kane?
There's a lot of names for it.
Yeah, Tracksuit Night, Wrath of Kane, whatever else you want to call it. Evander obviously returns Sunday at 2 o'clock. We'll talk about it Saturday starting at 9 a.m. with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or tweet at us at Illegal Curve for more information about the event and or to join our team in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Joe Smith. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Joe?
Good. I'm bummed. The only city I'm not going to make it to in this trip is Winnipeg,
Yeah, you're doing the Western Canada swing, but not making it all the way here.
No. Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton. I'm in Banff right now for an old day trip, but missing Winnipeg, though. Next time.
Tough place to spend a day there in Banff. It's only kind of beautiful.
Yeah, so it's a rough life, but somebody has to do it, right?
Exactly. Joe obviously brought you on to talk about the Lightning and to talk about Jonathan Drouin's trade demand. You know, when the news broke, you know, earlier this week about Drouin, you know, going public after being sent down to Syracuse, how surprised were you with the revelation that he had requested a trade back in November?
I was a little surprised. I mean, I was more surprised that they made it public like that. I mean, you could sense definitely even after the playoffs last year that he wasn't happy, especially being a healthy scratch for 20, 26 games in the playoffs. But I think once you saw him in camp and he had great shape and he had tremendous preseason, 4 goals, and he was on the top line with Stamkos from day one in camp until the first part of the season, you know, I kind of thought everything was all smoothed over. Everything was back to where it should be. But obviously the season hasn't gone the way he would like, and so I guess I was more surprised that it was made public than there was actual – I don't think I was surprised that he requested a trade. I was more surprised that it made it public. But yeah, I think, you know, any, a lot of people in the area were surprised to hear that for sure, because they already had one off-ice drama to deal with Steven Stamkos. Now another one just got added onto the fire.
Joe, does Jonathan Drouin have an attitude problem?
I don't think he's an attitude problem. I'll tell you what about Jonathan Drouin. I think he's a great kid. He's a hard worker. But I also think he's a very, very confident, very, very passionate player. And I think, you know, like a lot of players of that ilk or that confidence, he's a little stubborn too. So they can work both to your advantage and to your disadvantage sometimes. So I think that's how I would kind of describe him. But overall, he's been nothing but respectful and played around the room. The guys like him as a teammate, think he's a real pro. So he doesn't have a – I don't think he has an attitude problem per se, but I think anytime you have, you know, a player of that caliber and you're used to being a star and you're used to playing so well, and you're in the draft where everybody else in that draft is really an impact player in the NHL, I'm sure part of you is like, why can't I do that too? So I'm sure he's a little bit of stubborn in that respect. That might be why – you see this happening right now.
Joe, from afar, and you're obviously close to this situation, but from afar, it looks to me like Alan Walsh probably sees the Tampa Bay team, as you mentioned, dealing with another drama, probably up against the ropes a bit, and he's pushing harder now and with his client to make the Bolts make a move. Do you see it that way?
Well, here's how I kind of see it. You know, the trade was requested in November, and it was done quietly, of course. But you know, Jonathan Drouin has very little leverage in this situation. Mm-hmm. He's under contract, entry-level deal for another couple seasons, then he'll be an RFA. He's under control for several years now, okay? So the Lightning, you know, has all the cards, has all the power in the situation. And so since they requested the trade in November and 2 months later, nothing's obviously happened, I guess one way to stir the pot, so to speak, or put a little any pressure you possibly can have is to make it public and make it a storyline, and other teams obviously who weren't already realizing he was being shopped, you know, everyone kind of puts their antennas on that issue. So I think that was part of it, and I think the last, you know, probably last straw was going down to Syracuse, even though I think it was for the good of him to get back and get some playing games. But I think one of the last straws was that happened on Saturday, and then no coincidence that trade demand was public on Sunday.
Joe Smith is our guest on NHL this week. He covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, what's Jonathan Drouin's relationship like with both head coach John Cooper and with general manager Steve Yzerman?
Well, I mean, I think he's like most players with general manager Steve Yzerman. He's very respectful with him, and I think Steve Yzerman has Drouin's best interest in heart, and he's always been supportive of him. I think the relationship there is pretty good. You know, I can't speak completely to, you know, Drouin and Cooper. I think what makes that situation different is, you know, Yzerman doesn't handle the lineup, so Yzerman doesn't handle the ice time. He's a very old school where he will not interfere with Cooper and his lines and his lineups and all that stuff like that. And so this is strictly the one guy who's standing in Drouin's way, so to speak, other than himself and performing, is Cooper in terms of giving him opportunities and not, you know, having a short leash when he makes a mistake and that kind of thing. So I think that I don't think the attitude between the two is the issue. I think is, you know, he's kind of feels like he's not given the opportunity, the proper opportunity to play, and Cooper is one who's not given that opportunity. So, and both of them are very proud, both of them are very stubborn, and both of them are very confident people. So when you have that happen, sometimes there is some sort of rub-off in that.
Joe, as you're very well aware, the entire hockey world has their eyes on Steven Stamkos mm-hmm. this year, being a pending unrestricted free agent. Two-part question for you. What do you think the chances are that Steven Stamkos remains with the Tampa Bay Lightning and gets his name on a contract extension and stays with the Lightning? And why do you think he struggled so far this year? And do you think the fact that he's a pending UFA has been a distraction for him?
Well, three questions. Okay.
You're not supposed to count that closely.
Sorry about that, Joe. I'm a fellow journalist
there,
like
anymore?
You. So.
The first question is the hardest one, which no one knows the answer to, is if he'll be here next year. And if you had asked me in June or July, I would have said 100%. No doubt he's going to be back at Lightning next year. You asked me in September, 80-85%. You know, he's still pretty confident to get it done the season, but as it gets to January and it gets only a few months away from free agency, if it hasn't been done by now, you're going to wonder why isn't it? And I think there's better chances now than there was before of him testing the free agent market and not returning. But there's still a part of me that thinks that does believe him when he says he wants to stay and thinks that something could happen. But there's a lot more to this deal than him wanting to stay or Lightning wanting to keep him, whether that's what he would like to get paid. Lightning also want to know, I don't know if Eichmann wants to pay one player, no matter who they are, that much money, the cap going forward. And his production has been down to levels that were, you know, points per game, goals per game, shots per game, or down to where he was as a rookie. So when you're given to give a guy an eight-year deal, no matter how good of a guy he is or how good of a player he is or player he was, you got to be careful with those contracts if they don't go away. They're guaranteed, so there's a lot of moving parts to this deal, which is why it's such a complex, and I wish I could give you an answer. If I knew, I would have written it already, but we don't know.
Joe.
Second question is what?
Go ahead. Go ahead. You have to answer four of Ezzy's questions first before I get to ask one.
I'm going to get another one in.
And I think one of your questions was...
Has this been a distraction for Steven this year?
Well, I don't think he knew, had any idea what it would be like. He'd never been through this before. And so he said all the right things where it wasn't a distraction. But I think, you know, he's said before, he said it's hard to completely shut it out. It's hard to completely not think about it. I don't think when he's on the ice in a power play, he thinks about it. But I think the more and more it's been in the media, whether it was his inadvertent like or favorite of a tweet to being in Toronto, I think he's clearly is one part of an issue that's been a distraction. But I wouldn't say it is the main reason why he hasn't been producing as much as he usually is. So it's just one added little layer to the agenda.
Do you think, Joe, that, I mean, you look at other situations, you know, Winnipeg here, Bufflin and Ladd have certainly been a topic of conversation, what's going to happen. But I think any realistic Jets fan would know that the Jets didn't have the aspirations that the Lightning did heading into the season to go back to the Stanley Cup final and hopefully win it. We've seen in New Jersey, Parise going on a team, on a cup run with a team, unexpected cup run in that case, but still a cup run, and then leaving for nothing and setting the Devils back a long way. Do you see the Lightning, I know right now they're struggling to get in the playoffs, but do you see the Lightning holding on to Steven and taking a risk that he'll leave for nothing, or is it sign him or trade him?
Well, number one, it's not their choice. He has the full no-move clause, so no matter if they're considering trading him or want to trade him, he can just say, I'm going to ride this one out, try to make a playoff run with these guys, and then go my separate ways in July. So, but I do think, you know, and only Steve Eichmann and Stamkos know this, how the negotiations are going or how far apart they are or how close they are or the possibility is. If there's a realization that this won't be a match going forward, then I think it would behoove, obviously, Steve Eiserman to look into it. And I think if this team is struggling, the Lightning is not in the playoffs right now. If Stamkos wants to make another run at it with another team at the contender, then I'm sure, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that they would at least consider it. But right now, he holds all the cards. So if he doesn't want to go anywhere, he's not going anywhere. So that makes it harder for Steve Eiserman to handle that situation if he gets down to 29th, which is, of course, in Toronto. So looking forward to that one.
No kidding. That won't be the least bit of a zoo. The trade deadline, Monday, February 29th, the Lightning at the Leafs that night. That'll be an entertaining atmosphere. Joe, we'll let you go on this last question. It has to do with the Lightning's actual on-ice performance. You mentioned they've been struggling out of the playoffs right now. You know, 2 points behind Boston and Ottawa for that final Atlantic Division playoff spot. Why such struggles for this team? Everybody had such high hopes for them after last year's Stanley Cup run, and yet this year, halfway through the year, a really disappointing season.
It held a number of things. I mean, the injuries haven't helped, and everybody goes through them, but they lost a couple of significant players, whether it was Andre Palat or Tyler Johnson for half the season. Paquette and Drouin was banged up. They were missing five forwards at one time. Number two, they weren't able to score, which is the most surprising thing in hockey. I think they led the league in goals last year, and now they've been held to one goal or fewer 13 times in 40 games, shut out four times. So that's been the surprise. But they've just been maddeningly inconsistent. They're just, one day they look like they're the Cup champs, and another day they look like, you know, they're bottom feeders. They just, from their Jekyll and Hyde from day to game to game, and their starts of the games have been pretty awful. The first period, they've had a first period lead at the end of the first 20 minutes, seven times in 40 games. They're chasing the game a lot, so a lot of factors going into it. They're just not, they don't have the same swagger that they had last year, and they're definitely not performing up to the same expectations, which is why it's such a worrisome topic now. Not to add on to all the layers of all the other off-ice drama they have, mainly magnifies it.
They will certainly be an interesting team to watch leading up to the trade deadline on the 29th of February. Joe Smith covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, appreciate your time this evening. We'll let you get back to the après ski in Banff there, and thanks for joining us this evening.
And no, I think there's a dog sledding going on too. I don't know. We'll see.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too, Joe. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. One final segment is coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. The NHL All-Star Game is quite the joke. That's not news. But it is fitting that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing the best in stand-up comedy to the city of Winnipeg. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors and all week, Sean LeCumber finishing off his second week at the club. And, of course, tickets available for Dave Coulier. No, all shows for Dave Coulier have just been sold out. So there you go. If you missed out on them, check out a lot of other upcoming comedians at rumorscomedyclub.com. Blake Wheeler, more than a point a game, top 10 in the NHL in scoring, not an all-star. Dustin Byfuglien, the all-star representative of the Winnipeg Jets. You know, is it a function more of you just don't care, really? Or just, you know, the NHL all-star game already is such a joke that this is just, you know, you're not going to get worked up about it?
Well, see, I'm not going to sit here and take it too seriously. I mean, we're talking about the All-Star game here. And, Drew, I mean, we talked about this before the show. You were going to throw this in the show plan. I mean, I know Jets fans were pretty upset about this, and rightfully so. I mean, if you're going to talk about who is the most talented player and deserving to go to the All-Star game, I mean, it's Blake Wheeler. He's seventh overall in the NHL in points. Blake Wheeler has been the MVP of this team. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I mean, you don't want to take anything away from Dustin Byfuglien. It's a nice honor for him. He's had a good season. So I look at it, and yeah, sure, the All-Star game, does it mean much? No. It's really for the kids, the fans, and it's for corporate sponsors and all that. It's really to give the players a break.
Kind of sucks. I mean, Byfuglien probably does. I mean, you guess, I'm not going to say doesn't, because I know he loves playing hockey. Probably would, these guys all probably want the break. But the big thing for Byfuglien, I'm thinking, Izzy, is it's going to be quite the place for trade rumors to
percolate.
Be the focus and percolate, Drew, because, I mean, if Blake Wheeler goes there, represents Winnipeg, he's going to be a Jet for a long time, blah, blah, blah. But Dustin Byfuglien, is he trying out with other teammates? And that focus is going to be a lot of attention on him. I'm sure that's something he'd like to avoid.
You're right. That's kind of a different perspective or angle that you can take with Dustin Byfuglien going to the All-Star game, because you're right, Richie. Right now he's a pending UFA, as is Andrew Ladd. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is a showcase and an opportunity for general managers to talk to Kevin Cheveldayoff. I'm not sure if Kevin Cheveldayoff will be at the draft.
You'd have to expect he would.
Yeah, I assume. It's usually one of those gatherings where all the general managers will get together and, you know.
It's a fun city to go to.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to twist people's arms to go to Nashville. You know, from my perspective, the more, again, not upsetting because it's the All-Star game, so frankly, who cares? But, you know, the fact that the NHL doesn't take Sidney Crosby, who, despite his struggles this season, he's been great lately.
Yeah.
Great over the last, what, 10 games, I think it's been? Something like that. He's been more than a point a game.
Very good.
You take Sidney Crosby to your All-Star game. I know he's had lingering issues with not playing in the All-Star game. He got suspended
for
a game.
But you can't take issue with Wheeler not being on the team based on merit, and they say Crosby should be on the team, Drew.
Well, Crosby's numbers are, you know, the problem is, I mean, I don't know why Jonathan Toews is an All-Star.
Different
divisions and everything else. I mean, the fact that they're so obsessed about making the right, I mean, it's just such a disaster.
Well, the position stuff's hilarious because it's 3-on-3, so you might as well play 3 forward, 3 defense, but nobody cares.
Right.
That's a joke. So you shouldn't need that. You should just need the best players.
Yeah, just take nine good players from each division. You know, why do you need defensemen over, I mean, if a defenseman's good enough to go, he'll go. I mean, Erik Karlsson's good enough to go. He'll go. It's just such a farce of an event.
I guess they don't
want
guys playing defense because of risk of injuries, skating backwards and stuff. I don't know.
Well, is it ridiculous, Drew, that Sidney Crosby isn't at the All-Star game? Of course it is. He's one of the best players in the world. And I don't care about his stats this year.
Exactly.
I don't care if the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't doing well. He's one of the best players in the world. And I mean, his pedigree backs that up. So, of course, it's ridiculous. But is it ridiculous that John Scott is not only at the All-Star game, but he's a captain? Of course it is. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. It defies logic. But, again, you have to kind of accept it for what it is and enjoy it for what it is. And that's what I'm going to do.
And the thing is about Toews is, like, Toews' appeal, aside from Crosby, may be one of the five most appealing players in the league. So if you have an issue with Crosby not being there, then you're probably in favor of Toews along the same rationale.
Well, that's fine. Take both of them. Don't take one but not the other. I mean, the face of your NHL is, sure, Jonathan Toews.
Yep.
And
I mean, one of your biggest media markets, and he's Marc Messier. This generation.
That's right. He's Marc Messier. And Alex Ovechkin, you know, I get, you know, why
sure.
I mean,
yeah, I
and he
point.
Deserves to be there on merit. But can you imagine, even if LeBron James was having a little bit of a down year, you know, can you imagine LeBron James not being at the NBA All-Star game?
It makes no sense.
Or Michael Jordan when, you know, at the end of his career there. Yeah. They gave him some ceremonial role to attend. Remember Mariah Carey?
Well, he hit the big shot in the end, and Kobe hit a shot after and ruined
it. That's right. That's right. I mean, he's Michael Jordan. I mean, Magic Johnson played in an NBA All-Star game when he wasn't even a player in the league. The NHL is just so stupid about this thing. Take your best players. Take your faces of your league. I mean, I just don't understand it. Why?
Like, well, they screwed up the World Cup too, Drew. They don't really know what they're doing on a lot of fronts.
I know that they don't know what they're doing, but this has been a bugaboo of mine, and to some extent we've talked
for
about
sure.
on the show.
I'll tell you this much, Richie. I haven't heard Drew go on a rant like this
like
in
it,
a while. Yeah. I like it. This is like old school pre-married Drew.
That's right. Yeah, wow.
They just don't promote their
it's
stars.
Coming out after, too. Like, Drew, are you okay right now?
Laura is out of town, so maybe you are getting a little bit excited. Maybe Laura should come back.
Yeah, well, she can't come back soon enough. I'm going to have to keep cooking for myself, and it's a problem. The dog and I just stare at each other. We don't know what to do with ourselves.
It's wieners and beans again tonight.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. Hang on. Wieners and beans? No, wieners for one meal, beans for another. Can't do both of them together. That's too complicated for me. It's just so asinine, you know, typical NHL screwing things up along the
way. Do you think Wheeler actually cares, by the way?
Not in the least bit.
Yeah.
You don't think he'd rather get 5 days off? So, you know, he said it. You don't think Bufflin would rather have 5 days off to go fishing?
I know.
I mean, he said his quote today was, you know, everything interferes with his ice fishing. You know, you think he'd rather play that than play hockey half the time.
Buff loves his ice fishing.
Of course he does. I'm sure that he'd be glad to get nicked up somehow in the next, in the day before the All-Star game to get the slightest bit of an injury so he wouldn't be able to go and maybe none of his teammates would be able to replace him. You know, something along those lines.
Well, no, I think there has to be a player from each team, right, Drew?
Well, there was a year the Jets didn't have a representative.
Yeah, I think that's a new rule, though, right?
No, it was always the rule back in the day, I thought. They just couldn't get somebody in there in time.
Okay.
But whatever it is. I mean, ultimately,
jokes aside, it is an honor. If you had to go by the Wayne Gretzky, and you guys know he's my favorite player of all time, he always thought that it was an obligation.
Yeah.
As a player, to attend events like this for the fans and the people who are going to be there.
Right, and that is the positive side of this because, of course, it's been a bit of a joke this year, but you know the fans are going to get to see some of the best players in the world. Nashville's a great city. They're going to put on a great show, I'm certain. So.
And if you've ever wanted to see a hockey player skate well, really, really hungover, this is going to be the All-Star game for you.
And watch John Scott skate, period.
That's right. Big thanks to Sheldon Kennedy for joining us on the program and Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, legalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, and Keener Jerseys. For producer Alex, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening to NHL This Week. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.